Welcome to Cardicast, a glam podcast brought to you by New Cardigan. If you'd like to become a member of New Cardigan, head to our website at newcardigan.org, and if you're able to do so, please consider making a donation after you've joined. We run entirely on volunteers, so anything you can do helps us to keep the servers whirring and the Cardies partying. One of our Cardicore members, Claire Presser, happened to be in New York attending ARLIS NA, that is the Art Library Society of North America, and their conference, Out of Bounds, where she spoke with Madeline Veach, research metadata and zine librarian at SUNY New Paltz.
For all of the Cardicast listeners, I don't normally do Cardicast. It's normally Justine or Andrew. So I'm normally behind the scenes doing the editing, but I am Claire and I am currently in New York at ARLIS NA 2018, and I'm here with Madeline Veach, and we're going to talk about zines.
Great, I'm so excited.
First of all, I've heard a wonderful talk that you did yesterday, but talk to people about the institution that you're at.
Yeah, so I'm currently the research metadata and zine librarian at SUNY New Paltz, so that's the State University of New York at New Paltz, just 2 hours north of the city. And it's a neat position. I get to split my time between doing research and instruction work, cataloging and metadata work. I'm also the art liaison librarian, and then I do work with zines, and the work I do with our zine library is really integrated throughout the other aspects of my job. So I do a lot of instruction related to zines, and I catalog the collection, I do some collection development, and I work with the art department around zines and artist books.
Excellent. I would like if you explained a little bit of the mission of the New Paltz Library, just for people who aren't familiar with the reason why that library, because it's relatively new. It just started in 2014.
Yeah, it's within the Sojourner Truth Library, so it's within the context of an academic library. And really, you know, a big reason that we started a zine library, zines are like little unpublished chapbooks or magazines or textual works. Anyone can make them. They have a very low barrier to access. So with very few materials and funding resources, you can take your text, your art, and transform it into something that can be shared as a print object. And I think I felt really strongly that in an academic library, where I want, you know, our students and our campus community members to feel like their knowledge is equally valued, collecting zines was a way to say, you know, we're not just collecting, you know, things that come through academic publishers and presses and sort of have gone through all these levels of, you know, hierarchical authority and profit structure, but we value your knowledge. Your knowledge is what makes our library what it is and makes it vibrant and local and regional. So it was about getting our local voices and also getting more critical voices. You know, I think that, you know, when you look at the publishing industry, whose voices are amplified by the publishing industry? It tends to reflect kind of larger trends in society around, you know, oppression, access to power. And so zines provide a level of agency to all of us that I think is exciting.
Mm-hmm. On your library's website, it says creativity, critical social inquiry, and interdisciplinary research is kind of what the zines are about. Do you actually find that you need to guide some of the students with that, or that they kind of do it organically?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's interesting because we work with students in a variety of different ways. So sometimes they're in a class where they're very much guided by the coursework. So for example, we've worked with women's gender and sexuality studies classes where they may pick a theme and then they create a compilation zine where everyone is writing on that theme and someone's organizing it into one. So that's sort of, you know, where there's a group process. When we do programs that are open, that are not attached to a course, and anyone can just come and make a zine or learn about making zines, I think sometimes people feel maybe a little bit bewildered by the possibilities. I could do anything, you know, or maybe I haven't read zines before and I don't really know kind of what have other people done. You know, people always want to see examples and feel some kind of sense of parameters, even while we want them to feel opportunities. So, you know, we try to bring examples of zines, and I think that's the best way to just say, here, look at these, you know, what strikes you about these? What's interesting about the format or the content, or what's driving them? And then, you know, do your work from there.
So let's talk a little bit about the programming, because in your talk you were mentioning that you guys have recently held a 24-hour workshop in order to be able to make zines with, like, I'm just completely amazed by this concept that people would walk into this particular space and then come out with an actual physical thing. Like, the whole process is encapsulated in one particular process. Yeah. So can you talk to that a little bit?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think a big reason why we wanted to do a program that had that effect was that sometimes people get started making a zine, they do some collage, or they attend a workshop for a couple hours, but they don't finish it, which means they don't get to go through the process of photocopying it and seeing it as a democratic multiple, as this shareable, reproducible thing that they're going to circulate out in the world. So we thought it would be really fun to give people an opportunity to go all the way through the full cycle of having an idea, putting it down, having it reproduced, and then sharing it. And it's been really wild to organize because it's 24 hours that they're working on their zines, but it basically takes up a whole weekend. You know, they come in at 5 on a Friday. We give them a little workshop on zines and show them some examples. And then we just let them have at the supplies, and we provide, you know, lots of things to cut and paste and glue sticks. And we've got typewriters for them to type away on. And then we don't stay all night. I've had other librarians ask me, like, how do you do that? I don't know if we could do that. And I'm like, oh, we don't. We tell them to go home and keep working. And that's it's sort of scoped to whatever time they have. They can work as much or as little as they want in the next 24 hours and then bring us their finished copy Saturday by 5, at which point we start making the reproductions. You know, we start photocopying the zine for them, and then we deliver it at an event the following day. So that event is at a local coffee shop. It's downtown. It's a fun place to hang out. They can come and pick up their zines. They can trade them, swap them, you know, share them. We have a reading, you know, we have a mic. They can go up and read from their zine or talk about what it was like to make a zine. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. We've had good feedback. And last year, 19 folks finished their zine. And this year, 25 people finished their zine. So it was a lot that got made. And of course, you know, selfishly, it feeds our collection because we ask them if we can keep a copy for the collection. And many people do allow us to do that.
Oh, my next question was, do people, like, go, no, you can't keep this?
Yeah, occasionally. Occasionally people feel like they've made something that's so private that maybe they don't want it to circulate in a library. They may want to just give it to selected people, and I can understand that, absolutely. And really, you know, because zines are a very intimate format in a time where much of our sharing happens online, I think, you know, we emphasize that, you know, it's about your right to create this intimate space and to share or not share it however you like. When we work with classes, sometimes we have to kind of talk to faculty about this because they will want to make it a requirement for the class that the students submit their zine to our collection, and we'll say, please no, because we want the student to feel free to make the zine they want to make. And, you know, and then decide whether they want to share it with the whole campus community or not.
It is a very kind of different space if it's something that is mandatory or if it's something that people have elected to do. Like, there's a certain level of autonomy over the creative process that is taken away as soon as it is, like, a school assessment or something along those lines.
Yeah, and it's funny, we actually apply, we have a subject heading, a sort of a local subject heading that we apply to zines that were made for credit. We call them school zines, and we borrowed that from Barnard College, which uses the same heading, I think, for zines made by high school students in a class. And, you know, I think it is interesting to look at those zines as a subgroup. These were done for an assignment, for course credit, because they have a different quality, definitely.
So I just wanted to, because I was doing a little bit of research about zines and literacy in general. It's such an interesting, because they aren't a formalized book. They don't necessarily have to, in a similar way that graphic novels don't have to conform to a particular way that people elect to read them. They can sort of be creative with the way that people absorb the information from them, I think is probably the best way to do it. How does it assist the students' literacy within that space? Mm-hmm. I mean, is it something that the students find to be challenging, as in trying to break those down, or do they delight in being able to sort of like push those boundaries in those spaces? Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably a little bit of both, or a lot of both, or, you know, that students move through different phases with their zine making. But I think for a lot of students I work with, they've done a lot of writing papers and turning them in, and that's a very particular kind of thing where you have an audience and the audience is your instructor and maybe your peers. But with a zine, you are envisioning a wider audience, so you're having to sort of think about, how would I share my ideas if I were going to share them more broadly? And how would I break them down? You know, I mean, literally you're thinking about a codex, and how do I take my ideas or my artwork and you know, make it something that is legible in a codex structure. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that there's a lot to be learned in that process. And I think a lot to be learned by sort of walking through the process of creating the idea and drafting it and then putting it down and then copying it and then distributing it and realizing you're on a parallel track to the sort of dominant publishing model, but you're making many, many decisions along the way. So you're getting to sort of be aware of those decisions you're making, and I think it gives you more of an insider, at least for me, I feel, and I, you know, in the zines that I've made, I felt like it's given me a view onto sort of some of the decisions that drive all publishing.
I was thinking once again about literacy, but do you have many international students that maybe like English isn't their first language? Because mm-hmm. zines don't have to be sort of focused on text, whether or not they engage with that kind of process, because it is such a wonderful form of self-expression that you get to touch and hold and feel and make and do and all of that kind of stuff, that, and then you can show other people what it is that you've done as a person who is like in a culture that isn't their own at this point in time. Sometimes having those outlets in order to be able to go, here is a thing, this is how I am, what I do, that kind of stuff, like, do you find that you have international students? Do they engage with the program?
Very few so far, but it's interesting. I did have a conversation with someone who works in the English language learning program as, you know, as a teacher who teaches courses, and she was excited about the idea of using zines in instruction. So we haven't made formal plans yet, but I do hope that we'll be able to find a way to do a workshop that would meet some of those needs, and also I think that opportunity to sort of articulate something with visuals and text, it's sort of like poetry. It has a quality that can't be, you know, sometimes things we can't put into words, we can put into this sort of like visual textual soup, and that's one of the things I love about zines, and I think something that would, I could imagine learning a language would really lend itself to me trying to communicate.
We've talked a fair bit about workshops. The New Paltz Library, you can walk in and make a zine at any time, essentially, or is it only workshop orientated?
It's workshop oriented, but we do have zine making kits that are available for checkout, so folks can just check those out, and they do have to be students, faculty, or staff, but many of our programs are open to the wider regional community as well. And we do have typewriters that people can check out. So that's our goal, is definitely to make the supplies available at all times. And then our website is a source for some information. We try to put, you know, links to tutorials and videos and things that might inspire.
I did see the how-to guides.
Yeah.
So just with the kits, what actually, for if anybody's thinking about trying to start up their own kind of zine making things, like what goes into the kits? What have you found works or doesn't work?
Well, I would say we're still making kits that don't quite work, so we need to edit down the essentials are scissors, glue stick, and fine point Sharpie or black markers. And other things we've included in the kits that I think have been really successful include, we call them funky scissors. They're like scissors that cut a fun edge. And that's really great if you're like cutting out and collaging. You know, you could make something all jagged and fun. We have a stamp set in there, a letter stamp set, which is hugely messy because it's, we just bought a stamp set that doesn't stay in its box, so there's just letters everywhere. And we included an X-Acto knife and a cutting mat for doing fine cut work, which I think is not essential, but it's nice. But it may be something that we would edit out if we were to sort of pare down. We also included embroidery floss and needle for stitching final zines, because that's one way of doing a binding. The other way is to use a long arm stapler, which can get to the middle of the zine and staple it. We have those long arm staplers at our research help desk for people to use. I also think that the embroidery floss is not needed in the kit because mostly people are making their original zine. They're not kind of at the phase where they've photocopied it and they're sewing the final copies. And we have the staplers. So yeah, it, having more things in the kit creates just more chaos in some ways because, you know, we're working with a circulation department and they have to sort of, they basically said, we cannot confirm that everything that goes out comes back in because it's impossible. And we understand that. But we're thinking maybe if we simplified it more, it would be just more manageable.
Mm-hmm. So with the zine making kits, they can actually take that home. It's not mm-hmm. just a checkout in the library. Can they take the typewriters home?
Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah, we have one typewriter now that's a 7-day checkout, and then two that are the in-library use. But we're about to
carry them. They're heavy.
They're heavy. We made a lighter one, the 7-day, and we have another one that we just got that's very light that I think will make a 7-day. Yeah, because it is. And that's been fun too because, you know, most of the folks checking out typewriters are, they've never used a typewriter before, or maybe they use their mothers or their grandmothers or grandparents, you know. So there's a learning curve there. I often get called up to the main floor because they'll say, somebody has a typewriter, it's not working, maybe the ribbon's out of ink. And when I get there, usually it's that they're not pressing hard enough because they're used to typing on a, you know, a keyboard.
They don't realize they need to give it a little bit of extra muscle in
yeah.
order to be able to get that thing down.
Yep.
Wow.
It's an athletic process, typing.
So there was one other thing, distribution methods. When we were talking about the 24-hour zine workshops, is the distribution just up to the people that basically, or do you yeah. have like, because I know in Melbourne we have something that's called the Sticky Institute, which is basically people can go in and make zines there, but they're essentially a distribution place. So you can make the zines and then put them in the stores and they
wow.
pass them on kind of thing.
Oh my gosh, I want to come and visit and see this. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
They have a website. You can go and have
I'll
a look at
them. I'll check it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sticky?
Yeah, as in just S-I-T-C-K-Y, as in
okay.
the glue.
So okay.
Sticky.
Yep. Okay, great. Yeah, we've talked about other ways of supporting distribution. You know, when we do the 24-hour zine challenge, we have the swap event. We do kind of encourage and also support students going to zine fests. So, for example, we're going to the New York City Feminist Zine Fest at the end of March, and that will be a field trip that our student zine club will probably go on, and then I will also go representing the library. And in my role representing the library, I do some outreach to students who've made zines to say, hey, do you want us to take your zine with us and distribute it? And that's been successful. Some students who get really excited about zines, they have an Etsy shop and they have their zines in different bookstores in New York City that carry zines. They've kind of gone their own way with it.
So they've taken the bull and run
yeah.
with the situation, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it'd be fun to have something on campus. We've talked about that too. Like if we could have like a zine, I don't know, yeah, like a zine newsstand where they would be, you know, probably just free copies of selected zines.
Like the free postcards that you have in like some cafes
yeah.
and stuff like that. You just have the opportunity to have.
Exactly.
That'd be quite good.
Fun. Yeah.
I also noticed on your, because you're a speaker, you have a little bio that's on the conference website mm-hmm. that you're quite keen on starting up your own theme fest.
Yes. Yeah. So currently I've been collaborating with a graphic design faculty member at New Paltz, Dimitri Tetten, and we're trying to start an artist book and zine fest, because he's sort of more on the graphic design side, in the Hudson Valley, in New York. And, you know, we're going to try to get something going this fall. It might be a small kind of pilot, but in the future, you know, we'd like to grow it, because really zines are, because they're these personal objects that exist in real space, you know, as physical things, and, you know, not online objects as much as they are physical objects, having people in a room together, sharing, talking, trading, you know, selling, that's really important to kind of creating zine culture. Zine culture very much, I think, happens in real time, in real space.
I'm very much of a fan of, here is a thing that I made. Have a look at the thing that I have made. And there aren't very many opportunities for that. As much as there used to be, I feel like even when I was growing up, like, people would make mixtapes for people and all of this kind of stuff. And now it's kind of more of a, there's still, like, I share my Spotify playlist with you, but it's not quite the same of, here is a thing, you hold it in your hand, you can carry it with you, as opposed to it being sort of like an ephemeral thing, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's the difference between, like, making a thing and sort of arranging some things that all already exist in one central location, like a Spotify playlist. Yeah, it's very much like, I went out to the playlist, or I went out to the music files and organized them, rather than like, here's the object.
Well, you've already got that quite rigid framework within whatever software or program that you're working in. Like, you don't have the ability to sort of step past those boundaries unless you have a whole series of coding knowledge that isn't available to most people, whereas, you know, a pair of scissors and some glue is pretty much available to everybody.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's the radical act. I have a colleague, a fellow zine librarian at SUNY New Paltz, Lydia Willoughby, and she says, and I'm not sure if this is something she devised or someone else said, but I really love it. She says, you have the right to be offline. This sort of, like, radical act of saying, I have the right to make a thing, a real thing, and do what I want with it.
Yeah. So thank you very much for talking to me, Madeline. It's been super interesting, but I'll let you get on for the rest of your conference and maybe have your lunch.
Well, thank you so much. It's really been great to have an opportunity to talk with you, and I'm excited, to learn more about zines in Australia now that I know.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to come and see for myself.
Yes, indeed. Come to Australia. It'll be amazing.
That was Madeline Vinch talking zines with Claire Presser in New York at the RSNA conference Out of Bounds. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'd love you to review us on iTunes. It does help other people to find out about CardiCast and lets us know we're on the right track. Keep an ear out for more CardiCasts. Check out our website at newcardigan.org for more events. And always remember, folks, JFDI.